Live from Los Angeles, this is LA Talk Radio, broadcasting for the seventh year.
You're listening to All About Guitar with Jeff Lolo, only on LA Talk Radio.
Guitar, an amazing instrument. It has developed into an incredible voice in today's music. So many types of guitars, so many styles of playing, all sorts of gear. How does one make their voice be heard as a guitarist? My name is Jeff Floro and welcome to All About Guitar, where we talk tone, we talk technique, we talk gear. Where we discover how we can become better musicians in a world of constantly changing technologies. Where we take a good look at everything guitar. And sometimes not exactly guitar, but just as important. So we can be more successful as a musician in today's music scene. So sit back and relax, and let's explore All About Guitar. Good evening, everybody. Whoops. Ah! They set up the autos. I'm sorry. It segued right into the next clip. Good evening, everybody. Welcome to All About Guitar. I got a great show for you guys tonight. I'm really excited because I've had Jim Kimo West on before on the Flow Guitar Enthusiast show, and we went through the whole thing about. It's interesting this as a musician because a lot of people know him as the lead guitarist for Weird Al, and at the same point, he's one of the noted slack key guitars, Hawaiian slack key guitar people, and his tone is just amazing. Both. Either with Weird Al or whatever, his electric acoustic. But what I noticed, he had sent me this album a couple of months ago, and it's called Guitar Stories, and it just blew me away. And one of the things I want to say about it that really impressed me the most is I've been noticing with a lot of the artists that I've had on the show, there's a new breed of guitar players, and they're listening to their influences. They're absorbing from a lot of different influences, some of it rock, some of it Middle Eastern, classical, whatever, and they're integrating it. And I remember back in the day in the 60s, that was the whole thing. I remember when I first heard Sgt. Pepper's, it was all this melding of these different styles. And what blew me away with Jim's new album, Guitar Stories, is that he just took the bar and just went in some amazing directions. And there's some incredible stuff in here. He has some stuff like with string quartet. We're going to play these clips in a minute. He does some stuff with like some Middle Eastern influences, West African influences. It's really, he just raised the bar and just took it in a lot of different directions. I'm going to play a clip in a second that kind of set it up also too, because again, as a guitar player, he's got one of the best tone. I mean, his guitar playing, his sound of his guitars, and they're stock. I mean, he uses a Taylor, and it's a stock with a cedar top, and it just sounds amazing. But even on this album, with the different guitars that he's using, the tones that he's getting is so diverse, it just blew me away. Let me, before I introduce him and bring him up, I'm going to play you a clip to give you a feel of. Now, this is more with this is with 6 and 12 string guitars and slide baritone. He does some a little string arrangement in there. I think it's synthetic strings, but it's called Mele Menehune. I think I got it pronounced right. Let me play the clip, then you'll get what I'm talking about. Just listen to the tone of these guitars, and it's layered, but it's just some of the most beautiful sounds you'll ever hear. Here we go. Thank you. Welcome to the show, Jim. What can I say? It's just amazing. The tones. And one thing I want to interject real quick. I had a couple of weeks ago, Steve Pfister had come by, and we had worked on a show. And he was telling me about a new acoustic album that he's coming out. And he has a whole band called the Electroacoustic Band. And I said, you got to come on the show. You got to hear Jim, because he's going to give you ideas. He's going to give you some killer ideas. So welcome, Steve, to the show.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
Yeah. Thanks, Jeff. Aloha, and great to meet you, Steve.
My pleasure, Jeff. Awesome. And hey now.
Now, it's just, now that was 6 and 12 strings, baritone. Beautiful. It's just some of the most beautiful, but the tone. Now, we were talking a little bit before the show, and you've been doing engineering for a while. It shows. I
mean, well, you know, it doesn't take a lot these days, you know, to record your own record. You can do it with a very minimal amount of stuff. But as long as you have some good microphones and some good preamps, that usually helps, you know. I don't do anything real special. I just try and move the mic around in front of the guitar until it feels, you know, it sounds good. And
now, the sixth string was the Taylor, right?
Yeah, actually, the main two parts on that particular song were these, well, this particular baritone right here, which is a Tacoma baritone. Mm-hmm. And I recorded that song a while back, actually. That's one of the older ones that I recorded, but it was recorded on this Taylor baritone. And then, I mean, Tacoma baritone. And the Taylor, it might have been this one or the other one. I have two of the same. They're basically a Taylor 514 mm-hmm. CEs. Mm-hmm. And they have a cedar top and a mahogany body, so very, very warm. Now, I think it might have been the other guitar, but essentially what's happening is this baritone is down in the key of it's down in the key of D. I mean, the lowest, it's an open G tuning if you were playing a normal guitar, but being a fourth lower, now it's in the key of D. Now the other guitar was in the same open G tuning, but I had it capoed on the seventh fret. So when you do that, they are actually an octave apart.
Right.
So you get this very, very wide stretch. I actually have a track on one of my new records coming up where I've played the baritone and the other guitar capoed on the seventh fret note for note to where it sounds like one instrument.
So it wasn't a 12 string because it sounded.
No, there is a 12 string in there too. Yes, on one section there is a 12 string, but on the main part you're hearing just the interplay of two guitars, and it's basically the baritone mm-hmm. and then another guitar capoed on the seventh fret. So you have this, like I say, this octave range between
it's
the two
beautiful.
Guitars.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that's really cool about this album is he gives you all the tunings and he tells you what he did. So you can actually set your guitar up and try to play with it. It's great. I mean, I think that's so important because, again, I think a lot of this music should be, you know, this is the kind of stuff, I mean, when I was a kid, and I was exposed to this kind of stuff, I would try to figure it out and try to play it. You know?
Well, I always say that, you know, if I'm ever laid up in bed with a broken leg or something, I'll start writing tabs for all these things. But, you know, I really don't have many tabs out there for my music, and I really should. But
Well, I'm going to nudge him. We're going to play in a second. We're going to play a piece that he does, like, with kind of like a quartet. And it's scored. And you scored the piece. Well, let's just go ahead and play it. I already mention it. This is called Iolani Palace Waltz, and this is a beautiful piece, and I really urge you to publish this, the score, because I could see people playing this in college, you know, for their recitals and stuff. Mm-hmm. It's very cool. And I just want to point out, I want everybody to listen, this clip is it's about a 2-minute clip, but the guitar basically functions as the basso continuo, like a harpsichord.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But there's a really cool thing towards the end of it where, he's instead of just arpeggiating the chord, he's doing harmonics. And it's a very cool sound. It's just really, really nice. So let me go ahead and play. This is Iolani Palace Waltz.
Thank you.
That's just amazing. And when I heard that piece, that, I'm like, whoa. Wow. Wait a minute. This is slack key.
Yeah.
But it is. It says slack key and beyond.
That's right.
That's just an amazing piece. And you scored that. That's actually...
Well, you know, basically what it was I wrote the piece. I was on tour with Weird Al. And, you know, you have a lot of free time in the hotel room. And I'm always playing and writing. And actually, I recorded that. The guitar that you're hearing on there was actually recorded in a hotel room.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I recorded that while I was on the road. I was going to replace it. You know, I thought, well, that's just the working guitar track. And then after I got all the strings on there, I thought, hey, it sounds okay.
Oh, it sounds amazing.
But I, you know, like I said, I recorded it as a solo guitar piece. And then I just, when I got back home in my studio, I just started working on the string parts and, you know, extracting and finding melodies and counter melodies, and you know, you just go through it and find what works and what sounded good. And then once, you know, I used sampled strings for the demo, and that, actually the demo sounds pretty good. I used some really good samples, but that way I knew that it was going to work with the real players. And then once, you know, once I had it down, then I just got the real players in and just you know, had the parts, wrote the parts out.
And, it's a, and it's a kind of like a modified quartet. It's cello, viola, violin, and flute.
Yeah,
which exactly. It's very, 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 and the way you orchestrate it, the blending is just perfect. I mean, you know, strings blend, but the flute's kind of interesting in there, and it does some interesting harmonic things in there.
Yeah, and the flute often is as a texture. It's one of those things that you can use. You can double a violin sometimes with a flute, and it just adds a softness. You know, sometimes you just feel it needs to be a little sweeter somewhere. Sometimes the flute can just add that sweetness, you know, and softness.
Now I'm gonna play another clip and just like throw you in left field. It's another this is another one that just it just blew me away, and this gives you an idea because tonight you're gonna hear how diversified this album is, but it has a consistency to it. I mean, the music is just very uplifting, and it's very mellow, and the tone is just, your recordings are just great. But this is interesting. I'm not going to say anymore. I'm just going to play that. This is El Alcazar, and this, I cut two sections of this. This is actually a longer piece, so we'll see if you can catch the edit, but it's an interesting thing. Here's El Alcazar. Now that's the baritone.
That's right.
He's using the baritone. Now, I want to ask you something. One of the things that's really cool, he does this, like, arpeggio that's, like, really fast. I know. I want to ask you how you if you could play that real quick.
Well, I'm not sure if I can remember what it was, but, you know, generally...
It's so cool.
I do a lot of riffs where you use open strings, you know, and, you know, a lot of... It's an old trick that a lot of people use, even banjo players and stuff, where, you know, where you can take an open string. For example, I've got this in the standard, what would normally be a G tuning, but it's down a fourth, so it's a D. So if you use your open strings, you know, you can... Just by doing some finger picking stuff, you can get some really fast riffs.
Right, but I mean, the norm would be like to just strum, or like almost like a Rosciato, but you do like you actually pick it.
Yes, yeah, because it's you know, I'm not a flamenco player and I don't have those flamenco techniques, but it's really more of a finger style technique on this. But it's using those kind of tonalities, you know, that you might hear in some flamenco or Middle Eastern music. So you can. I'm just trying to remember. I think the main riff is. Oh, yeah. But anyway, you're using open strings a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't know.
No, it's just great. And then the dumbek, am I saying that right?
Yes, it's a dumbek, which is a Middle Eastern drum, yeah.
And you're using, according to the album, that's a D taro patch tuning?
Yeah, basically what they call taro patch in Hawaiian music is open G. It's your standard open G tuning, which is very common. I mean, that's what Keith Richards uses, you know, except mm-hmm. he takes off the sixth string. So it's a standard G tuning, mm-hmm. but since the baritone is down in D, then, you know, it's a different set of notes. You know, here we have D, A, D, A, F sharp, D, you know, so it's D chord. Mm-hmm. But it's a manly sound, I call it.
Yeah. No, it's real rich, and the overtone just lends itself well.
Yeah, you know, and again, a lot of it is in the technique. Like I say, when you're using a lot of open strings and having that ringing, that I guess you call it a legato effect, you know, of the open strings, it tends to have a sort of sound, and it's very hypnotic sounding. Mm-hmm. And I've always loved
that. Well, you
that,
get that you kind know. Of drone that's
yeah.
part of that style of music.
Exactly. The dissonances you get from, for example, you know, that dissonance there, or this dissonance. Those are beautiful, you know, beautiful dissonances.
Yeah. it's really amazing. Now I'm going to throw you in another place. I got another one. And this is interesting. This is called Morning Music. I'm going to play the clip, and then you can tell me a little bit more about what you were doing here. Great. So, and it says in the liner notes, it has that West African influence, which mm-hmm. I think is really very cool. That little tinkly sound, is that the Gorky bottle?
You know that the that's right.
He's got these like interesting instruments.
The little thing that sounds like a little bird whistle, kind of like a breathing whistle kind of a thing. That's the Gorky bottle. And everybody now the reason this is hilarious. Years ago in L.A., there was a little place downtown L.A. called Gorky's,
mm-hmm.
and it was a little coffee house, a little Russian coffee house. And it was kind of one of the first little trendy places downtown, back when downtown was pretty rough, you know. And a songwriter friend of mine, Natalie Archangel, who I worked with a lot years ago, a really great songwriter, we would do these little gigs. We'd go down to Gorky's, and we'd play. Now, they wouldn't give you any money, but they would give you swag and food. They would give you whatever you wanted to eat, and they would give you all this, you know, just different stuff they had. And they had this little, it was basically a plastic sports bottle that said Gorky's on it, and it had a little plastic straw sticking out of it. Well, I discovered that when you squeeze that thing, it makes this crazy whistling sound. You can kind of control the pitch of it, you know.
Oh, wow.
And so I've always kept it. It's in my closet, and it's the Gorky bottle, you know. It's one of my secret weapons, you know.
It's like, what the? I think even Steve's eyes are like, what?
The Gorky bottle.
Yes.
I love it.
No, I mean, this whole album is just littered with just cool little things that you're throwing in there.
Now, you have also on this particular track some Moog guitar, and the Moog guitar is really interesting. It's one of my favorite guitars, and it's not a synthesizer. Of course, Moog is known for synthesizers, but Moog distributed this guitar for a while. It was actually invented by somebody else, but it's essentially like a guitar. You know how Ebos work. With the magnetism, it's a guitar that has magnets built into the guitar itself, and you can control the amount of pull, you can control the balance between the two magnets pulling on different parts of the strings. You can create anyway these really rich, almost like a synthesizer pad, but more rich with all these different changing overtones. And so I tend to use that sometimes when I want something that's really lush and sort of filling in the sound, where I don't want a real string or something.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. And I believe that track has some of the Moog guitar on it, I think. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
Well, since you mentioned the guitar, let's play another clip. This is with cello, viola, solo guitar, and Moog guitar. This is called, if I pronounce this right, a beautiful piece, Mauna Kea Meditation.
Yes, Mauna Kea is the the highest mountain on the Big Island, you know. And
Also, too, in the liner notes, he explains what the inspiration for each of the songs, and he explains that in here. It's 14,000-foot summit. It's really cool. It's the whole thing. Each of the songs is a story in itself. It's a little story. And in a minute, we'll talk about the overall, how you approached it in terms as a concept album. But here, let me play Mauna Kea Meditation, and then you can tell us where the Moog guitar is at, because I think I know where it is.
Thank you.
was a quick edit right there. Yeah. It goes actually in a whole other part of the song. But that was now that was interesting because the it says on the in the in your liner notes I think the finger picking guitars are a detuning, and then the solo guitar is a Nui-Nui.
Yeah, that's one of my own tunings. It's called a Nui-Nui.
A Nui-Nui.
That's all right. You don't know yet, but by the time we're done, you'll know how to pronounce it.
I'll get these right. But that's good. No, that's good.
Yeah, a Nui-Nui is a one of my own tunings, and it's kind of a, I would say it's a detuning, and it's, I guess you'd say the tonality is kind of like a, maybe a 6 plus 9 chord sort of. It's a very unusual tuning because the top three strings are actually very close together, and you can get these voicings and chords that sound very much keyboard-like, you know, very, very tight voicings, you know. When you, it's one of the great things about using open tunings is you get, you know, you get voicings and sounds you would never get in standard tuning. So I always encourage people to, you know, get out there and explore tunings, you know, explore them and just try, make your own up, come up with anything, because it's, I find it very inspiring. When I discover a new tuning, for example, I'll end up writing two or three songs just because it's so inspiring. You don't know, you can't rely, your chord shapes are all different, so you can't rely on your normal guitar knowledge. So you're being led by your ear. You know, you're being led purely by your ear, and it's kind of a wonderful sense of discovery. You know?
Well, what's interesting about that solo guitar is the tonality of it's different. Now, did you mic it differently?
No,
what did you do? Because it's a different sound.
Well, first of all, being in that open in that particular tuning, you can get some. Your notes run together a little differently, you know, like I said, with these very close voicings. So it's a, you get, the notes are not, if you played that in a standard tuning, it would sound completely different. So the tuning has a lot to do with it. But then also I'm using a lot of palm muting on that. I'm muting it with my using my palm to mute. And it's just sort of a very controlled muting where you're, you know, you're just letting the note ring just enough. So it's not fully ringing. It's kind of slightly controlled by the palm, you know. So I, that palm muting type of a sound.
Can I bug you to demo that?
Yeah, you know, I...
it's an excuse for him to bring out the Taylor.
Yeah, well, if I'm just in G tuning here, but for example, see, if I was to do something, you know, palm muting, for example, instead of like, if I was to play this riff standard... That's open with a lot of legato, and if I palm mute it, it's a... See, I'm sort of selectively letting some notes ring louder.
But it still sustains. It's, I mean, I know you reverb it in the mix and stuff, but when you palm it, it still has... It has sustain to it.
Yeah, it's because you control the amount of palm mute. You know, you let your I guess I don't really know what I'm doing. It. I guess I'm just sort of letting my palm up a little bit when I want a note to speak a little more. You know, like if I just kept it really muted, I could go. Let's see, sorry. And if I let it up a little bit.
It just takes out a little bit of the harmonic, so it gives it like a little more of like a
little rounder sound.
And
of course less, you know, less sustained. But you can get a whole range of sound, and of course you can get a whole range of sound just by where you're picking on the guitar. You know, just that same riff picked up, you know, towards the neck is, you know, and as I move back towards the bridge.
But is it hard to palm closer when you're...
Yeah, it is. It is harder to palm mute when you're up here. You have to... Because I'm used to palm muting where I'm resting on the bridge, you know.
Right.
But you could just kind of stretch as far as you can with your fingers. And
well, you have... Your fingers are long, so you can kind of...
So that palm muting thing is quite cool, you know.
It gives it a whole different sound. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
Or that riff, you know, palm muted, is it? So it's that's what I'm doing there. And like I said, it's also the tuning. The tuning is unusual. Well, I'll show you what it is right now. It's very unusual, and I don't use this tuning a lot when I'm playing gigs because I really need to take another guitar.
It's like
I got to tell a really long story.
Well, it's going to be interesting to see when you play this album live because you're doing a lot of different things. You might have to bring an extra guitar.
Yeah, it is. Unfortunately, with this record, it's not easy for me to play live because, first of all, I'm not playing. You know, right now I'm not playing gigs where I can really afford to have all these players, you know, which you need. So, but like I say, there's a few of them, like El Alcazar is written very tightly so that there's not a lot. It's written as a complete band piece, for example. It's just bass, percussion, guitar, and violin, just those four instruments. So, you know, that's no problem, you know. Iolani Palace Waltz with his string quartet is not too big a deal either, but some of the other, you know, tracks that are very layered, you know, they're more of a
You did a lot more overlay of guitars. You're doing layers of, which is beautiful. I mean, I think to me it's very cool. The more guitars, the better.
Absolutely.
That's an interesting tuning.
So what it is, it's a D tuning. So I have D, A, E. It's like your ninth. There's your third. C sharp. I'm sorry.
And the B string is A?
A and B, yeah. So the B string is A, and the high string is B.
Oh, wow. It is a tight voicing.
So now you can get sounds like if I was to play in a minor key, I could go... It's interesting tuning, you know.
Yeah, I mean it's you get that.
If you're doing soloing, you can have voicings and you can like. Or like, you know, if you open it up a little bit. Voicings like that. Very keyboard-like, right?
Yeah. That's very cool. I love that.
Anyway, wow. That's the Anui Nui tuning.
The Anui Nui tuning.
The secret is out.
Yes. Now I'm going to throw this one. I'm curious. There's several guitars on this one, and this is like an Americana tune.
Yeah.
It's called the Daydream at Jumbo Rocks. Now I edited this thing together. It's another piece that's much more developed than what I'm playing here, but it's got some very cool things, and it has electric guitar in this too. Mm. So and lap steel. So let me play that, and I got a bunch of questions on this one. So here we go. Daydream at Jumbo Rocks. Thank you. There's a lot of guitars in there. I love that electric guitar. Now, what did you use, and how did you get that sound?
Well,
because it's got that, like, I don't know how to describe that sound. It's got a, it's not nasal, but it's like a nice, it's like a, it has a, an interesting tonality to it.
Yeah, well, it's an interesting thing. I'm trying to remember what guitar I even used for that. I have a couple of Tom Anderson guitars, which I like. It might have been one of my Tom Andersons. But the real secret on that is I was using a pedal, and darn if I can, I can't remember the name of it. I'm offhand. But basically, you know what? Remember what a whammy pedal is? Well, a whammy pedal allowed you to do pitch change. So in that guitar, you can hear it sort of doing these...
I was wondering how he got those chords to go down like
that. Yeah, well, what it is, it's a pedal. And I can't think, God, the guy, those guys are going to kill me now.
Is it, is it the DOD whammy pedal?
No, it's not a whammy pedal. It's another pedal that actually can, you can do whole chords. It'll, it'll actually transpose whole chords cleanly up and down. And, oh, man, I'm spacing that on the name of it. I feel terrible because they gave it to me. Okay. But it's a really brilliant pedal because, you know, the whammy is great for a single note and a pitch change. It does it really well. But this thing can do entire chords. So it was a really interesting way of doing it. I just played it through a small amp. I can't remember, probably just a little Fender amp or something. I can't remember right offhand. But I do use sometimes in my electric guitar recording, I'll use a number of things. I have some amps and stuff, but I also use a software-based thing called Guitar Rig. I use that quite a bit. And then I also use what I use live with Al, which is Fractal Axe Effects. Which is quite an amazing
But that box. Tonality on that was an amp?
I believe so. Oh, man, I'm pretty sure it was an amp.
Because it's an interesting sound. It's I don't know how to describe it, but
you
it's...
You know, it may have been a guitar rig patch that I worked up.
Okay.
It's possible. But, geez, I wish I could remember now.
Because it gives it just gives a whole different – it goes in a different place, and then I think on that piece, Marty Rifkin was doing.
Yes, Marty Rifkin played the lap steel. We did that over at his studio. Yeah,
and all those guitars. And now it says on here the tuning was the Mahoy.
Mahoy, yeah, that's a tuning of mine. I call Mahoy in Hawaiian means twins, and so I have this tuning that's really interesting. That it's another one of my tuning, and the reason it's called Mahoy or twins is that two of the strings are the same pitch.
The G and the B string
are
G.
The G and the B string are G, yes. So it's, I can show you real quick. So it's interesting. It's essentially if you took
So all the guitars are that tuning? The electric tune?
No, the electric isn't standard tuning probably.
Standard tuning,
yeah,
okay.
Electric is standard tuning because I was just doing regular stuff with that. So that was in standard tuning. But the main guitar... And in fact, this was another track that I wrote in a hotel room. It was basically, you know, I often catalog ideas, and I'm in my hotel room. I have a little small handheld recorder, so I just come up with ideas, and every so often, just like, oh, I got to record that. So I'll put that down on my little flash recorder, and then when I come back, I have hundreds of ideas, and I put them in my computer, and I go through them and catalog them, and throw out the ones that are no good, And then this was one of those tracks where I came back and said, oh, that's kind of cool. I think I'll just work on that. And that was just a little idea, you know. So this is the Mahoy tuning. Again, very versatile. And again, since you have not only close voicings of strings, but you have two identical strings.
And it's interesting because one's a wound and one's a plain.
Yes,
so it gives you a little different.
Yes, it's true. Now, like I say, because of the... because they're the same pitch, you can get, again, you can get these voicings that are just spectacular, you know? And almost there. So basically, it's like an open G, but I've got a C in the bass. And the C, you can play it in the key of C, or you can play it in the key of G. I'm playing in key of G here. Now, for example, if I was to... you can get voicings, for example, like... See, these kind of tight voicings would be very, very difficult. Mm-hmm. very difficult to get, you know. Then also with the, since you have a drone there, you can get a nice drone sound, or you can even use the two strings as a unison.
Yeah, that wound with the plane gives it an interesting.
Yeah. So I use this one a lot. Of course you can. That's an old slack key song of mine in that tuning. Then you've got a lot of nice voicings like. Just a real usable tuning.
I just want to say something to Steve. Is that cedar, how rich that thing sounds with the cedar top. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's...
Because we're used to, most of us play spruce top, but that, just listen to that.
Well, I have to give, you know, the Taylor rep at the time was a gentleman named Bob Borbonis, and I remember when I first contacted Taylor, I was really liking the guitars, you know, and I told him what I did and what I played, and he said, you know, I think this is the right guitar for you, is this 514 with the cedar top. And he said, I'll send it to you, and if you don't like it, you can send it back. And I just fell in love. It wasn't this particular one. It was the previous one I still have, which mm-hmm. is beautiful. And I really did just fall in love with it. It was just like, you know, it just totally fits what I do. You know, it's very, very sweet. And it wouldn't be the guitar I would choose for a heavy strumming part. I actually have another Taylor that's got a, it's a rosewood and spruce, and that's really good for strumming.
Do you use acoustic guitar with Weird Al?
A little bit, yeah.
But you use a spruce?
No, I use this one.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. The thing is, I take this one on the road with me anyway, and it's, so I always carry, have it in my hotel room, so that's the one I'll use on stage with him, just so I don't have to have another one, you know. But I do take this one. The one with the spruce top is actually, it's a Brazilian rosewood, so it's like, I don't want to take down the road.
No, I hear you.
Especially if I'm going across borders, you know, nowadays they start just confiscating that stuff.
Yeah. No, I mean, it's just, but with, I mean, a lot of it, the tunings add to the richness of it, but I mean, the tonality of that guitar, the overtones, are just amazing.
Yeah, you know, it's partly technique, too. I mean, like I say, I like slack key. The whole concept of slack key is using open strings a lot, you know, and using your open strings to your advantage. So that sort of permeates, you know, that's sort of my philosophy of playing. Mm-hmm. I use a lot of open strings. Because open strings just sound better than fretted strings. They're just richer.
It's just, yeah, and then the layers, the way you layer the guitars, too, and the interplay between this guitar and a lot of times the baritone.
Yeah.
It's a huge sound.
That is a huge sound, yeah.
Go ahead.
Quick question. Mm-hmm. Jim, what's your string gauge of choice? I mean, you're going from tuning to tuning, and it's amazingly rich.
Yeah, you know, I just use lights, except what I do is I put a... Lights normally have a 12 on the top. Uh-huh. I put a 13 because it just helps the melody notes sing a little better, you know? For some reason, when there's a 12 on there, it's just the melody, the high notes, you know, on slack key especially, we have a lot of our melodies are on the top string. And just for some reason, it just doesn't sing as well with a 12. And I put a 13 on there. It just just feels good, you know.
It speaks beautifully, yeah.
I'm going up into, this is a just standard open G, which they call Taro Patch. Why they call it Taro Patch, I have no idea.
Is there something, what's going on with the bridge, too? Do you have particular...
Oh, yeah, these are interesting. This is a thing called power pins.
Power pins, all right.
And there's a gentleman who lives down in Marina Del Rey that makes these, and they're very cool. Essentially, you know, when you're changing strings with these kind of guitars, you have the little end pins, right? You have little... One thing that always happens is those things go flying and you can't find them. And then it's like, oh, my God, I'm changing strings. I'm at a gig. I can't find that stupid pin, you know. Mm-hmm. So these power pins are a little great invention. It's a little brass bridge pin that has a slot in it. And, it bolts through your normal hole. So inside the guitar, there's a little nut. You tighten it down. So you have six of these. Now, these all have a little slot in the side. And a place for the ball of the string. So to change a string, all you do is you just slide the string in the slot and pull it, and the ball pops into that little hole there.
All right.
So essentially, you don't have to go through the whole end pin thing, you know, and it makes changing strings quite easy. And it actually, I think it makes it sound a little better, too. I think there's a little bit of
brass?
They're brass, yeah.
So it gets the sustain.
Yeah, it I think it did add a little bit of sustain, but they're called power pins, and they're quite reasonable. And I really think they're a wonderful invention, and that's very...
That's interesting, because you would think that the, you know, the normal angle of an acoustic guitar string going in the body,
right,
the more angle from the bridge down is supposed to give you more sustain, but that's...
Yeah.
The open notes on the brass, who knows?
Well, you know, I did, you know, because I was kind of skeptical, so I did record, you know, with mm-hmm. without, and it certainly didn't sound any worse, you know.
Okay.
I haven't had any, you know... real complaints about it. They seem, and it's like I said, it certainly makes changing strings really easy, you know.
No, it sounds great. It definitely has an impact on his tone. And that's the stock bridge, right? The
yep.
Taylor bridge, stock Taylor nut.
That's so. The only thing it's not stock is just this little.
If real quick, we could also mm-hmm. a question about just your basic miking technique.
Oh yeah,
and,
sure.
What you know. Brand of microphone and your preamp of choice, the real
geeky
stuff.
Okay, yeah, sure,
Jeff.
Yeah, well, generally, one thing I do that makes the biggest difference is I always, pretty much always mic in stereo, unless it's a okay. really minimal part that doesn't need, you know, any of my big mm-hmm. guitar parts, I'll mic them in stereo. Now, even if I don't spread them in the stereo image really big, it just mm-hmm. seems to add more life to the sound, you know, it just seems to be fatter. And
12th fret in the bridge?
Well, I'll tell you what I do, I've been experimenting with it, and I have a couple different things. Usually what I'll do is I'll use a large diaphragm condenser,
okay.
and sometimes a tube one. I have one that's called a Lawson L47. I use that a lot, and it's kind of like a U47, old-fashioned tube mic, or I'll use an AKG 414 for that.
Okay.
And what I do is I usually put it about maybe 10 inches away from the guitar, right around maybe the 15th fret, somewhere in that range, 15th to 17th fret, somewhere, you know, definitely not over the hole because
okay.
it gets too
mm-hmm.
woofy. And it can vary. Now, of course, the baritone doesn't have a sound hole. It has, you know, this design Tacoma, it has this funny little hole at the top of the upper bout. So generally what you have to do, what I like to do is when I'm placing the mic, I'll put my headphones on. And I'll just move it around a little bit, or move myself around a bit, till I find the sweet spot,
okay.
you know. And then once I do, I try and remember it. Then what I've been doing also is I use a small diaphragm condenser, and I think what I'm using now is an AKG 480. It's a small diaphragm AKG mic, and I have it pointed again about 8 or 10 inches away from the guitar. The same, try and keep the distance the same on the two mics, otherwise they're not totally in phase.
Okay.
But I'll have it pointing a little more at the bridge, sort of like aiming at the bridge, you know,
right.
and I always find that combination, it's, you know, you'd think, well, you should use two of the same mics, but I'm using two different mics, and it's actually kind of cool, because they really add, you know, they add their own
yeah.
their own thing, you know. And
you've never used ribbons?
Yes, I have used, I've only recently owned a ribbon in the last, you know, year, and I'll use that. In fact, I was using it extensively on this new record I'm doing with Ken Emerson, because he plays an old National, 1928 National Tricone,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, those things just seem to work with a ribbon mic, you know, it seems like they were made for it. But I have used ribbon mics, and I've got a nice one that I like a lot.
And what preamp do you use?
Well, I'm using a couple... different preamps. For a long time, I've used a Neve 1272. It's a very, very basic Neve. It's two channel Neve power preamp. But lately, in fact, on a lot of this record, I used it's a stereo tube preamp, and it's made by a guy named Anthony DeMaria.
Okay,
and
yeah.
he's a renowned. You know, he's used to rebuild the old Urey LA2 compressors. And I bought one of his ones that he started making years ago, and I just loved it. It was so good. And then he came out with this beautiful tube stereo preamp, and it ended up being distributed by a company called Presonus, which is usually known for sort of, you know, not
budget.
Really, you know, more consumer level
yeah.
stuff. But it was a fairly expensive box, and it has just a wonderful set of features. I mean, you can have a variable impedance. It has and it just really has a really warm tube, clean tube sound. You know, I always like to have somewhere in the chain some tubes. You know, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, maybe if it's a solid state preamp, I'll run the LA2A tube compressor.
Right.
You know, and I always like to have a little bit. Something, some certain compressors have a sound, you know, and I think a lot of this was, I think the ADL preamp, since that was tube, I was running into like an 1176 compressor, your mm-hmm. 1176s, but sometimes when I'm using a solid state preamp, I have some APIs I use too, and then I'll use the LA2A on it, because having tubes. Somewhere in the chain seems to bring out the overtones of the guitar. It's just,
right.
You know, there's something about it that just all of a sudden they just sound richer, you know? And it's some kind of weird mojo, but I don't know what it is, but they just sound better right now.
We're out of time.
Oh, great. Okay.
I knew it would fly really fast. But real quick, where are you playing where people can see you play?
Well, the only gigs I've got coming up now I'm playing with some singers that are actually coming over from Maui, and mm-hmm. I'm playing a Friday night at Soho in Santa Barbara.
Okay.
And it's an early show. It's a 5:30 to 7:30 show in Soho at Santa Barbara. And then the other show, you know, I have a couple other shows, but I think they're sold out. Coffee Gallery on Sunday. It may be, I believe it's sold out.
Oh, good.
But I think, you know, some people, they're still taking names for, like, wait list or something.
Okay.
But that's the Coffee Gallery at 7 p.m. in Altadena on Sunday.
And the album's called Guitar Stories, Slacky and Beyond, Jim Kimo West. You can get it everywhere. Steve, you're playing somewhere. Tell me.
Baked Potato, new band, the electric acoustic band, and we're playing May 12th.
Oh, I got to come see that.
Jim, come on.
Yeah,
down.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love the baked potato, too, so I'm definitely going
to. And I want to shout out to Lori, who's helped me a lot on this show, too, Lori Reamer. April 6th, Night Train Music Club at the Buffalo Club in Santa Monica. There's a bunch of singers, songwriters, musicians. They do a bunch of different things.
Awesome.
So I'm going to leave. Thank you so much.
Thank you,
it's
Jeff.
Great.
It's great.
I love this album. Fantastic. I can't say
it. I wish your show was like 4 hours long, because, you know, we could just keep talking.
Well, you're coming back. You know you're coming back in the fall. We're going to do – you got another album. We'll talk about that later. But he's got another album coming out, so we're going to be back, and there's more. There's going to be more. I'm going to leave us with this – this is a beautiful piece. This is the baritone guitar. This is called, if I pronounce it right, Nakoa Moku o Kio.
Kiave.
Kiave.
There you
okay?
go. You almost got it.
Yeah, almost got it. I'll get it. I'll get it one of these days. But anyway, this is a beautiful piece. All baritone. It kind of defines this awesome tone that Jim has. Thank you, Steve, for being on the show.
Thank you
it was
for having
just,
me.
It was
My
awesome.
My face hurts from smiling listening to this beautiful music. This is fantastic.
Everybody have a great night, and check this out. This is just really great.